I'm Michael Bryden, and you're listening to All The Best, where today I'm joined in the studio by Jess Fairfax.
Hey.
And Maddie McFarlane.
G'day.
Who, for the last few months, have been working on something pretty amazing. Can you guys tell me a bit about the collaborative radio project?
Well, it came about 12 months ago. Jess and I were both thinking of ways to make community radio more accessible and also more accessible in terms of content authorship as well. It's one thing to have folk come through the door and be an interview guest, but in our mind we were realising that it's another thing to have folk be able to engage and create their own material.
So the project was a collaboration between PBS here in Melbourne and Multicultural Arts Victoria. It was funded by Creative Victoria, so thank you state government for your monies. And also through my role at Multicultural Arts Victoria, I also see a lot of artists that I work with wanting to be able to have the opportunity to tell their story through a medium like radio, which is so accessible and listened to by so many people. So it was kind of bridging that gap between PBS that were really wanting to reach out to communities and communities that were really wanting to reach out to radio. Being that guiding hand, I guess, bringing community into the station and making sure that it was welcome and that communities knew that they could be here and make radio and be part of the station.
Great. So we're going to hear a few of the final pieces that were produced for the collaborative radio project, but first off I think we're going to listen to Is It Sharper and a writing exercise that you guys organized.
So in the workshops, one of the exercises we did, and this was one of my favorite, it was a writing exercise that was adjoined with a sound exercise, and it was sort of the first time that the participants really acknowledged the ability of sound, because a lot of them had never done radio before.
The exercise we're going to hear was part of a pairing whereby one of the participants would read their 1 minute script.
Sure.
And the other would be in control of the recorder, and they'd pair up and record and then switch over. So they're getting experiences being the narrator and then also the technical side being the recorder.
Okay, great. Let's have a listen to Sharper's workshop piece.
My story is a dance and music. Music is a spirit that brings people life together. When you close your eyes and you feel the music in your heart and you can make a dance movement in your body. When I was a little boy, my mom told me, Kofi, stop dancing and go and find something to do. And I said, Mom, I love music. I love dancing. It's always my heart. He said, no, son, go and find something to do. And I said, Mom, I want to do this rest of my life. But now I'm looking after my mom and my dad and all my family through dancing, money I earn in my life, looking after them. So the story about my journey of dancing and music is never give up. Never forget where you come from. Anything you want to do it, keep doing it, and you make it. Always make the music and dancing proud in your system and your life, and make something about it. That is my story. One love, one art, one people. Blessed.
So once the participants have worked through the exercises, like we just heard, what happens next?
Following those 8 weeks, they were teamed up with a mentor, and then they worked with their mentor to realize the piece that they wanted to. And so sometimes they had a clear idea about the piece that they wanted to do, but most of the time they had a clear idea and then had to shift on that because of the reality.
Changed, yeah.
And also just in conversation, I remember Ase Gedewa coming to class and I asked him if he'd thought about his piece, and he's like, nah, just don't have any idea. Then I asked him what was going on in his everyday life, and he'd started volunteering with an organisation which he was really interested in, and he was really involved with the group. And I said, well, do you think you could go and interview some of the other volunteers and what you enjoy so much about this organisation with a radio audience? And that became his final piece.
When I first arrived in Australia, after leaving Ethiopia, I was away from my home and away from my family. I didn't feel a connection between my home and this new place. I joined the Ethiopian Community Association in Victoria, and I have become a project and administration officer as a volunteer. The association provides support and information for refugees and asylum seekers. Although Ethiopians in Melbourne are away from home, they still have experience of some of the cultural celebrations and language from their home country. I spoke with Gashaw Nele.
My name is Gashaw, the Ethiopian Community Association Victoria chairperson.
Gashaw was one of the founders of the association in 1986, and at the moment he is serving as a president.
In 1985, there was no many Ethiopians and Africans in general. In 1986, after 1 year, we managed to form our associations, Ethiopian Community Associations, and we can say that we are the first African associations in Australia at that time.
The Ethiopian Community Association has a board, executive committee, and a number of subcommittees under its umbrella. Among other activities, in collaboration with other organizations, the subcommittees organize different Ethiopian cultural events at different times.
The first one is New Year, Ethiopian New Year, which is, belongs to everyone, whether it's Muslim or Christian, everyone participates for that. We used to do that. The other one is Fasica, which is Easter. We call it Fasica in our language, which is Ethiopian Easter, which happens after 2 weeks. After 2 weeks of Australian Easter, we celebrate our Easter. So it's Misa for Christmas.
This is the sound I would hear if I was celebrating Christmas at home in Ethiopia. With the Ethiopian Community Association and the events they organize, it means I can still observe Ethiopian traditions away from home. Mostly, I was happy when I was at home with my family, and I miss them. I really miss them. But still, I try to keep the feeling of home with the community members. I asked Tadek about how he feels to be part of the Ethiopian Community Association.
Oh, yes, okay. Yes, this is obvious. Okay. My name is Tadek Manji. Yes, I'm the vice chairman of the current Ethiopian Community Association. So how I feel, that means, yes, we established the community to foster each other, to get together, not be scattered, to keep our language, our culture, our history, our identity, being in here in Australia, to share and describe what we look like, what we Ethiopians look like, and to keep those identities to the next generation, the forthcoming generation. So I am proud of being an Ethiopian, and being an Ethiopian, and I am proud to have or to keep up the Ethiopian Community Association in Victoria. So we had different occasions that be elated or happy to share and to take experiences and cultures, religious celebrations, cultural celebrations to the wider the Victorian Australian community. So we are, all these are part of the events that we can identify or be happy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's when that was great.
So, in addition to this point, Ethiopia is naturally multicultural society. Australia is just forming from, you know, oncoming refugees to form multicultural society. But Ethiopia is by nature multicultural society. Maybe you should understand that Ethiopia has got 200 dialects and around 80 languages in Ethiopia itself. So 30 months of sunshine, not 3 months, 4 months, 30 months of sunshine, different calendar, different language. So we managed to show for wider Australian society here in Melbourne.
The emblem of the Ethiopian Community Association includes a map of Ethiopia and a green, yellow, and red flag. This emblem was designed 29 years ago. But in 1991, the government of Ethiopia changed and the flag and the map has also changed. The general attitude and the aspiration of the people in the Ethiopian Community Association may create some tension with the Ethiopian government at home. But Ethiopians in Melbourne are enjoying and sharing an Australian multicultural lifestyle by preserving their own traditions and history. They are living in unity within diversity.
Thank you very much. Which is our language, which means thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to All the Best, and today we're sharing stories and documentaries made as part of the Collaborative Radio Project. It's been teaming up radio producers with members of refugee and asylum seeker communities to collaborate on radio stories and documentaries. I'm joined in the studio by the organisers of the project, Jess Fairfax and Maddie McFarlane, and this next story is called Across Thin Ice. Jess, what can you tell me about this piece?
So this was a really great example of Antu working collaboratively with his mentor, Jay Krantz. And Jay is a fantastic radio producer. She's also a musician, so she's really strong on sound design and composition. And it really came out in this piece. And I think for Antu, it was an amazing opportunity for him to find confidence in his voice under the guidance of someone like Jay, who could really help bring that out in a supportive way.
I think across the pieces, we notice participants and mentors focus on certain skills that really mean something. And so for Antu, he pretty much had the script solid for quite a while. And then I guess the main difficulty and then the main thing he wanted to focus on was learning to use his voice and hearing his own voice. So I know Jay and Antu spent a lot of time, a lot of takes, getting the voice. And I remember when I started out on radio, pressing play record on the tape deck and hearing your own voice was certainly one of the daunting aspects to overcome.
And that was a big thing for Antu. Like, I remember when we did that writing exercise and he recorded himself, and like, I'm pretty sure that was the first time that he'd heard his voice, or one of the first times. And like you said, Maddie, it's always a cringe. Now we're pretty used to it after doing radio for however many years.
But it does take a while. It takes a while to get used to hearing your own voice.
I can't handle it. I can't handle it. Just make it stop. So, yeah, that was a big step for him.
Okay, let's have a listen to Antu's piece, Across the Thin Ice.
It's been years since I last ice skated. Never skated on an actual frozen body of water before. I'd never seen snowfall until a week ago. I sit down at the bank of the canal, unlace my black sneakers, and slip my feet into my newly purchased skates. Lacing them up, it dawns on me. These are the sorts of skates a Disney princess would wear. White and dainty. They were the last pair in my size at the sporting goods store. I put my sneakers into a plastic bag, tie them onto myself, and throw the empty box of skates inside a wooden rowboat frozen into the side of the canal. The box sits atop six-pack rings and other empty boxes. I swing my legs over the ice and stoop down off the bank onto the frozen canal, filling my ice legs, slowly teaching myself to skate again. Put my right foot down, push my weight off it, put my left foot down, lean forward,
keep moving.
There were rumors of a girl falling through the ice earlier today. I think about the thin ice and falling through, drowning. I can't swim. Wondering how long it would take to find my body and work out who I was. I was the sole Asian person staying at the hostel. Divers bringing up my bloated body, hostel workers rummaging through my luggage to find my passport. A Dutch coroner informing my mother that I had died because I indulged my sense of whimsy. Less than 5 people knew I had left the country, and only 2 of them knew I was in Amsterdam. The rest thought I was staying in Frankfurt at a friend's place. I had bought my plane tickets abruptly 2 weeks before. I'd never been on a plane. I'd never really left Melbourne before. I had to leave. I felt the sort of unhappiness that made my friends uneasy. And they couldn't understand. They are white. I had feelings of racial angst. Feelings of being an outsider in Melbourne. Despite being accepted by my friends. Despite being a native. Despite the multicultural environment. I grew up in pre-gentrified Collingwood during the 90s, in the middle of a heroin epidemic. Racist sentiments towards Vietnamese people were the norm. Living in the aftermath of that was less than easy. You navigated overt racism. By osmosis, you took in implicit racism. The fact that my English was fluent invited really ugly connotations from whites and Asians. All this was brought to a front when I had a run-in with a group of tattooed white men in their 40s on the 96 tram one night. They were racially taunting me, saying things like, I didn't think it could read English, as I read England's Dreaming by John Savage, my hands shaking, trying to keep them steady. I felt unsafe after that. I had arrived in Amsterdam at a fortunate time. It was the first time in years the canals were frozen enough to skate on. Everyone in the city bought skates. Delight overrided my caution. As I moved across the ice, I watched different groups of people skate through the canals with abandon. Child and parents skating together for the first time, businessmen in suits twirling around with their briefcases, and the ironic young people sipping their beers with rich smiles in the cold. As it grew darker, the bars and cafes along the canals set up tables and chairs on the ice for their customers to enjoy. I skated along with the Dutch through the night, the sounds of Raphael Sadiq playing in my headphones, packs of us skating across the entire city via the canals. Each section of the city was separated by an impasse, the makeshift tunnels underneath each bridge. Underneath these bridges, the ice was the thinnest and watery, and the dark made it hard to see the way through. I would skate up to each bridge and join a group of waiting skaters, waiting on one brave skater to mark out a safe route across the ice. The brave one skated carefully across and shouted the instructions back on where to skate to avoid falling in. The skater in front of me turned around and repeated the directions. I replied, "Sorry," in English. He said, "Go through on the left, but be quick." I smiled and thanked him. Not only did the Dutch look after their own, they looked after those on the outside too. I took my first step into the dark under the bridge. With each glide, I felt the slushiness of the ice against the blades. Put my right foot down, push my weight off it, put my left foot down, push my weight off it. Being sent across the thin ice underneath the darkness of the bridge by Dutch strangers was the safest I felt in a long time.
That story was called Across the Thin Ice, and it was produced by Antu. And you were saying that Antu was hearing his voice for the first time, but Nutty Man, I think, has heard his voice before.
Yes. He's a superstar.
He's like really, really famous in Ethiopia. He's a massive household name. He's an incredible musician and performer. Like when you see him on stage, he's just power. So he was really excited about this project because he's always used music to tell his story, and he's got such a platform to tell it. He has a lot of, you know, a big fan base. So for him to be able to use radio and storytelling to tell his story was really exciting for him. And he kept saying, like, this is so great. I want to do this more. I never even knew this was a thing. So he had a lot of fun with it. And also just great for him to be able to tell this story of coming to Australia as a super duper pop star and like playing at a festival and in this funny middle ground of like being really famous but actually starting out new again in Australia and what that feels like, and Yeah, I think this was a way of telling that, and he was pretty excited to be able to do that.
It was a beautiful Sunday afternoon. The sun was shining in Melbourne. I was at home listening to the songs I'd been rehearsing for the festival. Today was the day. The music was so loud. I was getting changed, singing along. My mood was high. Headphones in my ears, I left the house and headed for Tram 55. Everyone on the tram was so quiet. They all looked sad. In my country, when there is a big festival, you can feel the excitement. I guess there must just be the Saturday night leftovers. The tram stops and a guy gets on. He sits down next to me. I noticed I was the only colored person on the tram. He was drunk and also started harassing others on the tram. He dropped me from my high. I arrived at the festival. My energy was negative, and I brought that with me. I found one of the band members backstage. I was feeling frustrated and we argued. A frown on my face, I headed to the stage to see what's going on. I found a couple of Afro-Australian artists performing. The crowd was cheering, people were smiling. I started to feel hopeful once again. The crowd were all shades, dancing together. My energy boosted. It was time to jump on stage. The troubles were behind me and the crowd was picking me up. I realized music is the universal language that gathers us all together. I don't know about you, but it's my remedy too.
That piece was produced by Melbourne-based Ethiopian musician Nutty Man. So we've got one more piece for you today, and it's by the Hazara musician Taki Khan. And he came into the PBS studios when you initially broadcast all these stories. Is that right, Maddie?
Yeah, and I remember so vividly his segment on that broadcast day. We played one of his pieces about Kabul before introducing Taki. And so before we even got to his radio piece, there was a discussion about the music, his journey to Australia, music in that journey. And then we heard his piece, which is, you're going to hear it, but a really a moving piece on the experience of Hazara asylum seekers. And I think to have all of those elements side by side in this live broadcast, the music and the interview and Taki giving context, his presence in the studio and then working into his radio piece, it really gave me a much larger perspective and put his piece in a much larger context. چشمای تو را وقتی که بخواب میبینم سودای میشم
سهرای میشم. There are many refugees living in Melbourne, and every refugee has their own story. My name is Taki Khan, and I am a Hazara man from Afghanistan living in Melbourne. I meet many people from many countries. Ali is a friend of mine, and he is currently on a bridging visa. Now is the time to hear his story. Zara zara
zara mishum. Basically, I'm from Afghanistan, and I grew up in Quetta, Pakistan. is the atmosphere or is the target killing of ethnic Hazaras were going on in in Pakistan as well as in Afghanistan. So we were compelled to leave our homeland. I came from Pakistan to Thailand and from Thailand to Malaysia, then Indonesia. And from Indonesia, I came by boat to Christmas Island. First time when we came by boat, so our boat sank in the water and it was destroyed by the water. We were about to die in the ocean. So the Indonesian Navy came and they rescued us. And then we were kept in immigration as well as in jail in Indonesia. I don't forget that moment. Really, it was too hard to me. And my whole family, those who were in Pakistan, they were crying too much. And someone has told them that they are not in life. When we came out from the detention center, still we are in detention, like in a community detention center, because we don't have the right to do anything. Even for the citizen, there is another rule, and for asylum seeker, there is another rule.
Even though Ali is safe in Australia from the danger he left behind, here he is also faced with stress. He is missing his family. He has health issue and he is living in limbo, unable to work and unable to study.
I don't know what should I say, that it is my luck or it's my bad luck, because still we are in bridging visa and we don't have the right to work and we don't have the right to study. Yes, I have an experience of working in office, but it is my more than 2.5 years in Australia. Still, I did not get any kind of opportunity to go for any kind of study and to. I would like to keep continue my study and to work in Australia for the Australian people and for the Australian government, for the Australian country. I have a health issue. Even when I was in my home country, I was fully fit and I did not have any kind of problems with my health or with my mental health. Even in Australia, although it is safe for my life, but I have mental health. I have a depression, I have a tension, I have an anxiety. When I'm thinking about my family, because I'm my wife and my children, they are back home in country. I don't know what they are doing and what will be happen with them, because they are living in such a circumstances that no one knows that when the terrorists come and attack on them. You go and search the Google or YouTube, you can find that which kind of difficulties we are facing in Pakistan as well as in Afghanistan. From 1.5 century, we have been killing by the different kind of ethnics and different kind of the terrorist groups. It is a good experience while being in Dandenong or in Melbourne. I have too many friends from Afghan community as well as from the other communities. I have a good relationship with them. I think there is more than 35,000 people, and from 35,000 people, they are from different kind of countries.
There are many of these stories in our community. I hope in the future that everyone will be welcome and we can all share our stories together.
As I think, if the Australian people, if the Australian citizens, they love asylum seekers and if they love the refugees to come into Australia, They should pressurize the government and the government policy. Power of the people is the most and so powerful they are.
So, Maddie, what do you think the participants learned from the project?
Well, we asked them.
One of the most important thing for me in this radio project experience was and is the transfer. There is some kind of transfer in my life that make me from listener to participant. You know, especially when starting from being in Australia, I was mostly listener. So this is very important turning point in my Australian life, and it makes me now, it changed me from listener to, you know, radio producer or participant. So this is very wonderful.
First of all, this radio program was very good experience for me, and I learned from my colleague that they teach me how to do the to record the story and how to make a story. After learning something and after learning many things from the radio workshops program, and then after that I decided myself that I need to do a story about refugee on bridging visa.
For me, it's like a new experience because like I never done it before, and like I usually like tell stories like through my writings and my lyrics and some written stuffs, but here is like a new experience for me because like it shows me like a new direction to put what you have in your mind or something. So it's really, really nice, and I really enjoyed it.
That's it for this week's All the Best. This episode of All the Best was brought to you by Multicultural Arts Victoria and Melbourne's PBS 106.7. All the stories from today's episode were originally broadcast on PBS's All Our Stories. Thanks to Jess Fairfax and Maddie McFarlane for joining me in the studio to talk about the collaborative radio project and for working with us to put this show together. Thanks also to all the producers who contributed to the episode: Shaba, Natiman, Taki Khan, Antu Nguyen Tran, and Ase Gidewa, and their mentors, Josephine Smart, Jay Kranz, Bethany Atkinson-Quinton, and Beck Fari. If you like what you heard, we've got links to audio from the Collaborative Radio Project and a link to the All Our Stories show page at allthebestradio.com. All the Best is produced at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and Triple R in Melbourne and 4ZZZ in Brisbane. Our features executive producers are Heidi Pett and Jess O'Callaghan. My co-host is Pip Rasmussen, and I'm Michael Bryden. All the Best is played across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation.